Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. Apologies for none last week, but we're back, sort of. Bob sends his apologies. Bob is doing a bunch of work and a bunch of projects because, again, he does all the secret important stuff. And also, he has a daughter who has lots of activities. Summer camp. That stuff is tough. But in his place, his return visit, his triumphant return, the sequel from The Athletic, Jonas Siegel. Jonas, thanks so much for doing this again. Appreciate it.
I'm happy to be on. Yeah. Well, I would have preferred to do it with Bob.
See, I think, didn't you say that last time?
Did I?
I think you might have. I think you're already recycling jokes.
No, it's going to be fun to chat with you. We've got lots to talk about.
And by the way, this is not the first time. What is it about me? Dave Feschuk. No, it wasn't you. It was Feschuk who made the same joke. I think I'm a delight.
We should try to see what happens if you're not here and Bob comes on. Maybe we'll make the same joke to Bob that we'd rather do the podcast with Bob.
Then I'm fine with that. You know, because as long as it's equal, I'm all good with that.
But you know what's good? Like, you guys are so different. Like, you're very out there and fun and, like, energetic. And Bob's, like, more introspective and analytical. Mm-hmm. And that's why you guys have a good podcast.
It's a yin and a yang. And we, like, I got some analytical, but he's got more. I'm more emotional.
But one thing I don't know if people know about you. You are, like, the only person maybe I've, actually two people who are maybe more prepared than you. Mm-hmm. Mark Masters, who is like a maniac, like obviously he covers the Leafs primarily and obviously covers tennis as well.
Yeah.
He reads everything.
Yeah.
And Dennis Bayak, the only other two people I've seen more prepared than you.
Yeah, no, I'm a prep monster. And actually it's one of the things I always appreciate about The Athletic is that, you know, just different avenues. So, you know, okay, let's see the Star, the Sun, the Globe. And then, okay, let's go to these blogs. Like, you know, let's check out Pension Plan Puppets or this or that. And then let's get The Athletic. Mm-hmm. And actually, that's not even the order. I probably first now start with The Athletic, then get traditional.
You don't need to suck up. It's okay.
What's interesting? I got this, you know, let's start here. And I got some Leafs thoughts with you. I want to talk Kawhi Leonard, summer vacation. Also, what food only works in the summer? So I want you to think about that because that question was thrown out there by a listener. I'm trying to save all my listener questions for when Bob and I are back together, but I want to throw this one out.
Okay.
Someone texted me and they were, or tweeted me. They were angry because I retweeted an Athletic article and they said, stop sending out, you know, links to stuff you have to pay for, you elitist. And I thought that was so weird. Have you got that any pushback because, oh, I have to pay for this? Have you had a lot of pushback on that?
Well, I don't check any of that stuff. So
that's true.
Know.
You know, why am I asking you this? You don't check Twitter. What a dumb question by me. When was the last time you even checked Twitter?
Like mentions? Like a long time ago.
You want to pull out your phone and see some mentions?
Years. No, like I just don't think it's constructive for me. So I don't do it. But I sort of get it because... But what you're doing is you're just recommending something that you saw that you found interesting and you want to pass along, which is basically half the point of Twitter.
Yeah.
So I don't.
I think it's
totally
about the fact that they some people, they only want their information for free. And because there's so much free information out there, you know, or, you know, newspapers, you can get 10 free articles a month. I think it's weird. I didn't think there'd be a pushback from people about having to pay for all the content. And maybe it's the word premium content or something like that that strikes people as elitist. To me, it's ridiculous because you've got rent or mortgage and you need food to survive. And, you know, the work that goes on there, it's like any journalist, you got to pay for good stuff.
It's just like the model was backwards, right? Like the internet comes out and everything is out there and nobody thinks like maybe we should get people to pay for this. Like we have to pay for our employees. We have to pay for travel. We have to pay for all these things. And now it's like all these companies are coming to the realization like we can't survive if you don't if people don't pay. So now it's like what probably should have been the way it started is happening now. And it's hard sometimes when you're not used to paying for something that suddenly you pay for it. But like there's lots of things that I didn't pay for, I don't know, 5-10 years ago. Like I have Netflix and I have Crave TV and I have Apple Music.
Yeah.
I would never have thought like that I was going to pay Apple $15 a month to have as all the music in the world. But now I'm okay with it. Like, I like being able to just go to my phone, and if I want to listen to any album, any live album, anybody I haven't heard,
yeah,
it's just there and I can just hear it. Like, that's cool.
By the way, let's think about, like, and I'm not talking about you, but this is a general thing. The entitlement. Wait a minute. I've got to pay to have all these things right at my fingertip? Shame on you, company.
Right. And like, there obviously are still places, lots of websites where you can get free content. That's fine. Yeah. But this is trying to do something different and trying to make it more sustainable, because like we've seen across journalism, like places are just closing because it's not financially viable. And I don't know, it's like $5 a month.
Like, wouldn't you like to go? Yeah, exactly. It's cheap.
Like, that's, of course, hey, let's be fair. Like, yeah, like for some people, $5 a month is like, it adds up.
It does.
It's not nothing.
It's not nothing. It's $60 on the year,
but it's not like a crazy expense to help.
Yeah.
Bring different stuff into the world.
Oh, yeah. And wouldn't you want to go back in time and first murder Hitler? Remember, whenever you have to go back in time, you got to murder Hitler. That's the rules. That's why, to me.
Yeah, but you know what? Then, like, there's like the, you wonder about the butterfly effect of like everything. Like, what happens? What would change?
I know. But that one,
we'd all agree that that's what you do.
You know what? We're going to wave the butterfly effect, or in Star Trek Next Generation, you know, about the Prime Directive. You know, but that one you do. So you murder Hitler and then go to 1997 and talk to every editor of every major newspaper and go, guys, the internet's coming. So what you're going to have to do is a very modest amount of money. You know, charge people for it, and we'll all be better off for it.
The problem is, like, they came around to that realization too late.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
By the way, and I've said this before, so I won't go on long with this theory. I'll throw out this crazy theory. Then we're going to get to the Maple Leafs with Jonas Siegel. I almost did a radio reset. It's a podcast. If you're here, you're probably listening anyway. Is Back to the Future the most anti-Semitic film of all time? Because at no point did they even have a brief conversation about, let's murder Hitler. It's, hey, we got a time machine. What should we do? Let's go to a school dance and watch my parents make out. There wasn't even just one point in any of the movies. Even at the end of part one, roads, we're going, we don't need roads.
Hey, wait, I have to stop you.
Yeah.
I saw that was when I was a kid and don't remember anything about it.
You don't remember anything about Back to the Future movies?
And I haven't seen it since. I started it
not great.
That long ago. They're and then re-watchable. I'm like, you know what? I can't do it. I have a pretty good, like, cultural, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. Like, I've seen and listened to, like, a lot of stuff.
Knowledge.
Yeah, I'm pretty good.
Yeah.
But there's, like, some blind spots I have, like everybody probably has. Like, I was realizing, like, I've never seen Footloose. Never saw it.
You never saw Footloose?
It's just, like, certain things, like, just I missed. Like, I didn't, it for some reason didn't enter my space.
Footloose is such a great concept. It's John Lithgow as the evil, well, not evil, slightly repressed minister that bans dancing, and it takes a young Kevin Bacon to, you know, to help lift this town through dance. There's a great dance montage where I think it was Michael Penn, one of Sean Penn's brothers, passed away a couple years ago, where they've got a montage of him teaching Michael Penn how to dance, and he's like the square, you know, farmer, you know, small town farmer. You got to see Footloose. It's ridiculous and it's awesome.
How do you ban dancing? Like, how does that, how did that plot point?
It was the early 80s. Just, high schools couldn't have dancing. You know, you couldn't have any dances, any of the high school dances, or at any organized function. No, I mean, what someone did in their basement or their home is fine, but you couldn't do it. You couldn't do it at major functions.
Okay. I'll get on that.
All right. So my basic point is, I wish the script writers had said, you know, hey, Doc Brown, like Michael J. Fox, why don't we go murder Hitler? And then we'll go deal with Biff and we'll go back to the high school dance or whatever. Just a throw in line and then move on with your day. Now we'll move on to the Maple Leafs.
I can't deny that. I think you would go and do that if you could.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite theories. All right, here's my theory on the Maple Leafs. Every day I wake up and all I want to see is that Nylander's been signed. But then beyond that,
is that really what you wake up every day thinking?
No, like, no.
I cover the team, and I don't think
It's ever. Not true. But I would say once every couple days, especially if I'm doing prep. We talked about I am a prep monster. I will just put William Nylander in Google News or on Twitter just to see if anything's out there. But I don't want to get on William because eventually he'll sign and he'll get his deal and whatever. I think the Maple Leafs need to sign Matthews and Marner this summer. And Let me ask you this. What do you think is a high-end ask for Matthews and Marner in terms of money and term?
Well, they're in different boats, right?
Yeah.
Matthews is in his own boat.
Yeah. Let's start with Matthews. What do you think? Like Matthews's team. What do you think they would ask for?
Well, let me say if I was their team.
Yeah. No, if you're your team, you're gonna ask for like near the max.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is what he deserves.
Right. There's a problem for so long, I think, in sports and the way it's covered and the way it's perceived, that athletes are supposed to like do everything for the team. Like you're supposed to make everything easy for the team. You're supposed to take discounts. You're supposed to, they're owned by like, we forget that like they're owned by like billionaires and like,
oh yeah,
these like corp, like they're owned by like MLSC, like, or Bell and Rogers. And I don't know. We just have the sense that like athletes, I think of Winnipeg, like with Patrick Laine, like they don't have enough money and like Patrick Laine can't make more than Mark Scheifele. That's crazy. He's worth what he's worth. So like Connor McDavid gets 12.25 or 12.5. I can't remember exactly what the number is.
Yeah.
Which was a discount because like Connor McDavid is worth more.
Of course.
But that sets the bar on, I think, what you could probably get away with asking and being reasonable.
Connor,
if you're Matthews.
McDavid set the bar. Whatever the in the CBA the max is, that's not the max. The Connor McDavid amount is the max.
And eventually, he took less than what he probably could have pushed for.
And John Tavares took less to come to the Maple Leafs.
Sure. So like if I'm Matthews and I'm wanting to get every single dollar I can, I would ask for that. But the Leafs obviously aren't going to give that. So I think like what's probably fair is exactly...
And I'm going to go somewhere with this, but I want to know not what the Leafs would want to pay. What do you think the team, like Matthews' team, what do you think they would ask for?
What they would ask for and what they could or should ask for are two different things.
What do you think they will ask for? Not what they should, because they should is more of this, you know, higher amount.
Somewhere around 11 for 8.
Okay. So let's go 11 and a half. Let's go 12. Okay. Let's go 12
okay.
for Matthews. Now, what about Marner? What do you think the high end for Marner would be?
Okay. So Marner is very hard. Like of the three guys, like Nylander, Matthews, Marner.
Yeah.
I would say Marner's the hardest, then Nylander, then Matthews.
Yeah.
Matthews seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And Nylander's difficult because, well, we can get into that. Marner's hard because like the timing is kind of difficult, and if I'm Marner, I think I could make a case that I deserve every bit what Jack Eichel got or Leon Draisaitl got, and those are two different numbers. Like Draisaitl got 8.5, Eichel got 10. Marner's numbers are right there.
Yep.
Like they're very good. But if you're the Leafs, like you're looking at that and you're like, man, like 10 by 8 for Marner. We can't do that. Like we got to push that down.
Yeah.
So the tricky thing is, if I'm Marner, that's what I'm asking for right now. You want to sign me now? That's what I'm asking for. Now I would also consider if the Leafs came to me and said 8 by 8, we'll do that.
Yeah.
If I'm Marner, I might think about that. Like I'm taking a bit of a discount, I think.
But I'll be 28-ish when the deal's done.
And I'll still get another contract. And I think it's probably fair. But if you don't want to do that, if you're the Leafs, and if you don't want to do that, if you're Marner, which is fair, because like these other guys who have numbers around yours or maybe inferior got more, then what do you do if you're the Leafs? Because like you can wait, and then Marner could get 90 points.
Ding.
And then all of a sudden, I'm Marner, and I'm going to be like, you know what? Forget about 10. I want 11.
And the reason why, and what you said there sort of gets to my next point, which is, I want the Leafs to, quote unquote, and this I'm just using a quote, overpay for Matthews and Marner. Whatever the team, whatever they ask for, give it to them.
But why are we saying that's an overpay?
Whatever amount that they would ask for, it's going to be seen as, oh, the Leafs are overpaying a little bit, even though I don't believe they are.
But so what does it matter what the perception is? Like the problem is, like I was talking to Myrtle about this not that long ago. The problem is, and he was squashing it and saying like, I'm not being realistic.
Yeah.
But the problem is like, we've had this, the way it's been done for so long, where because the guy's a restricted free agent, like he's held down in some ways by the system of what he can get. But Marner right now, I don't know he's worth somewhere between 8 and 10.
Yes. He's worth somewhere between 8 and 10.
So why, just because there's this restricted free agent system, should he have to like take less.
I agree with you. The thing is, we're in full agreement. My main point is that if the Leafs are smart, they don't go too hardball with Matthews and Marner, because they'll go in thinking, ooh, we can't give, like, put it this way. Let's say you pay Matthews 12 and you pay Marner 9.5. I would do that today in a heartbeat, because as long as they stay healthy, and the fact that you've brought in Tavares, which is a huge skill injection, and no more JVR and Bozak, which means more first power play time, you know, especially for Matthews. If those guys stay healthy,
possibly,
those guys are going to have bonkers numbers next year. And whatever they ask for this year, like whatever we perceive, mm-hmm. and again, it's a wrong perception, whatever we perceive, of, ooh, that's a lot of money, do it now. Because if you don't do it now, next year, that amount that they asked for in 2018 is going to feel like a bargain.
Yeah, and like the thing is, I would always be okay, quote unquote, overpaying, and you're not overpaying. So, like, let's get that out of the way. But I would be okay paying those guys more, because you're paying for like high end skill.
Yeah.
As opposed to like what's happened a lot in the NHL is like you're paying for grit and you're paying for leadership and you're paying for like all these intangibles. Like, you look back and it's amazing that it took this long for GMs and teams to stop being like, we need to give 7 years to Milan Lucic. We need to give 7 years to Andrew Ladd. Like, these guys overpay for like stuff that's quantifiable, that like you can bank on, because you can't, in a cap system, like if you're banking on leadership or grit or any of those other things, it's hard to get value from. Like, the whole thing with the cap is you need to be able to get value. And so like with those contracts, you're still going to get value because the cap is going to keep going up.
Stamkos is making $8.5 million next year.
And that was a huge discount, obviously. But like Connor McDavid is always, barring health, going to give you value on that contract.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing, just like you mentioned with Marner and Matthews, you're going to get value on that.
Maybe not year one or two. And by
No. Right away, like in year one or two. That's, I think we have to get over this idea, just because they're really young and they're really inexperienced.
Oh, no, it's not about them. It's about the salary cap. And they're going to be munching up so much of a percentage.
But that's
of
what
it.
They're worth. Mm-hmm. Matthews, like, next year could score 40. Well, if I was betting and you told me I had to guess what he was going to get.
Yeah.
It's 40-ish goals and probably 80 to 90 points. Or maybe it's 70 to 80 points, whatever it is, because of the ice time and who knows how that's all going to shake out. But I'm pretty certain of what I'm going to get from him.
Yeah.
And I think that's worth the percentage of the cap right away that he takes up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. And that's what I want for the Leafs this summer. Sign them all now, because the team is dedicated to skill. Certainly more so with just the young guys being brought in and bringing in Tavares. Like, bringing in Tavares means Marner's, you know, his production, it can't not go up. You know, it's just, unless there's an injury, I'd be shocked if you see the other teammates who have played with Tavares, who have career years, and then they go to the Sabres, and then, you know, and then they don't play, their production goes down because they're just not playing with someone as the high-level talent that Tavares is. If you were going to sign Tavares, if you're the Leafs, get these guys done now. Don't worry about what the dollar value is, because they're worth it, and you're only going to have to pay them more next year.
But you know what's interesting? Okay, so I was talking to James about Marner, and he made the point, and I think it's a fair one. We're looking at Marner and judging him to some degree, like on 2.5 months, the last 2.5 months of the year, where he was top 20-ish in scoring. We still, to some degree, don't know exactly like how good he is, but we have like a pretty good ballpark.
Yeah,
I think it's interesting that you don't put Nylander in that same category, because it's for some reason it's like Matthews, Marner, break, and then Nylander. Nylander, like if he hits whatever his potential is, I kind of think his ceiling might even be higher than
it could
Marner.
Be. I don't think anyone would be shocked if Nylander gets you 80 points. He's always been close to that point per game guy. He's always sort of
not
close
yet.
To it.
He's like in he's
wait, a, wait, six, a point or sorry, he's point a six, 0.75.
He's like a 60-point player right now.
Okay, but I think
that's first 2 years in the league. The big difference with him and Marner is he could score 30 goals. Like he has a shot that Marner doesn't have. Mm-hmm. It's just with Nylander, there's like this kind of lingering uncertainty with him that I think is really interesting, just because of how he plays night to night, and like sometimes he's there and like sometimes you can see he's not totally engaged.
Yeah.
But if he puts it together, like his skill set is to the point where I don't know how good he can be.
Yeah.
Maybe he can be better than Marner. Like, I don't know. Be.
And what wonderful, like, think about this. Like, think about what we're speculating about. Yeah, there's three guys who could easily all get you 80 points or more. 2015 feels like 20 years ago. It doesn't feel like 3 years ago.
But that shows you for so long kind of the errors in some ways mm-hmm. of the organization. Like, you look at past first rounds, and obviously, like, past first rounds, in some of them, they weren't picking top five. Like, Morgan Riley's an exception. Luke Shen is not an exception. Yep. Yeah, that's a top 10 pick. And they were going for different stuff. Like, they had that first round where, you know, they picked Stuart Percy and Tyler Biggs.
Oh, we all remember that.
That is not a play on skill. Like, yeah. You're not trying to hit home runs. And I think when you get back to, like, Kyle Dubas and the way he's going to do things, he will be taking bets, I would think, on skill. And, yeah. Like, guys who have some upside, as opposed to like Frederick Gauthier, who's a first round pick, who the day they pick him, they're like, you know, he maxes out as a third line center. For a first round pick, like, that kills you. Like,
yeah.
Anyway. That's a sidetrack.
So. No. Listen, the podcast is all about sidetracks. Like, for instance, we're sitting here in your very nice condo, you know, downtown Toronto. Who picked the flowers there? You got what you got, like, was it a big sunflower?
I picked those up yesterday.
Yeah. Flowers are underrated.
I like fresh stuff in a house.
Yeah.
Like, I think we have lots of plants. I just think it brings like life to your place.
Oh yeah, there it does bring an energy to it. When I buy them, I never buy them for me. You know, I buy them for my girl, but I always like seeing, first thing I notice, like, oh, those are very pleasant flowers we got in there. Flowers, to me, underrated. Before we get to the Raptors, I mentioned this about food.
Wait, you know what's weird? We had that whole conversation and didn't talk at all about Tavares.
It's true.
What happened?
Well, it's because what's left to say? It's. I mean, the Tavares, let me ask you this. Were you shocked that he signed here?
No. Really? I was preparing for that.
Really?
Yeah.
Because James Myrtle, sometimes you refer to him as, first time you brought him up, you said Myrtle. Second time you brought him up, you said James. You haven't actually said his full first and last name. I noticed that. He threw out a great stat that I mentioned a lot on TSN Radio. I think I gave him credit every time. Actually, Landsberg sometimes, like, all you ever do is oh, it's Myrtle this, Myrtle that. But it was a good point. Since 2009, the top 27 players in terms of points per game, since 2009, not one had ever left their team via free agency. A couple of them have been traded, like Phil Kessel, but none of them had left. So precedent said Tavares wasn't going to leave. Why were you fairly confident that he was?
For a couple reasons. One, it seems like for a while now, anything big that could happen to the Leafs did happen to the Leafs. Mm-hmm. Like, you went into that process for the lottery, and it just felt like it's gonna happen. Actually, you can go back before the lottery. They get Babcock.
Yeah.
When it seemed like there was a chance they would get Babcock, and really since Shanahan has come on to some degree, not completely, but like the big things that have needed to happen for them all have happened.
Yeah.
Like, they get Babcock.
They got rid of Phaneuf's contract.
Yeah, that's a big one, but that I'm not including in this. Like, I'm looking at the really big things. They get Babcock, they get the lottery, they get Matthews, and then obviously Tavares. Like, it just felt like the big things that need to happen were going to happen. Yeah. And if you're Tavares and you're looking at all the options and you're from here, I just didn't see why you would look to the other places and say that that's a better fit for what it seems like he wants to accomplish.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's the added part that he's a Mississauga kid.
Yeah, when you're looking at the teams, the one that made the most sense wasn't San Jose, because their stars, their best players are over 27, 28.
They're over 30.
And some, yeah, some of them are over 30. Yeah,
no, 30, they're 31. All over 30. Like Pavelski, Burns. Jones, I think, is right around 30. Like their core is older.
Yeah, I mean, Hurdle, like, I don't know if you want to.
I'm not, yeah, Evander Kane, like those guys.
Hurdle and Kane are, but they're I guess, mid-tier players. They're not guys
right,
that
are Right, and gonna, they're pushing yeah. closer to 30.
So I never thought them. I thought, you know, like if Tampa could have done it, I'm like, okay, we just got to. You know,
Tampa is the only other one.
Tampa was the only other one that, you know, would make sense if it's just I want to win, smart organization, great players, you know, no state tax, and if I want to be invisible, you know, I can be invisible there. To me, I was just shocked because it never happens. Just the precedent is, you know, it's like, oh, it makes so much sense for him to come to Toronto. Oh, wait, no, never does. I guess the difference is when Stamkos was looking to move, the Leafs organization wasn't in the position it is today to give Tavares confidence that I'm going to an organization that can legitimately compete for a cup every year of the life of my contract.
Well, it'd be nice to see hockey change a little bit where players aren't like put through the ringer for not being quote unquote loyal.
Yeah. Do you think it would normalize?
Can you swear on this podcast?
What's that?
Can you swear on this podcast or no? It's not advised.
I mean, I sometimes be.
Okay, so it's BS that players have to be loyal to these organizations. Like, mm-hmm. It's just the way the system has been designed where they get drafted onto this team and then they're put, like, their whole lives are in this culture where team, you're not above the team.
Is that a bad thing?
Yeah, to some degree it is.
But if the players all do it and they see.
This is work, this is their lives.
Like, I understand that, but. And in a lot of ways, you know, I agree with you. But what I find fascinating is the players seem to like this.
Now, I don't know if I buy that. I think they are. So it's bred into them to be in this system where.
Do you think they hate it? Do you think they hate?
No, I don't think they. I think it's like it's how they're raised. So they're raised to think that the team is more important than me. I should do what the team is. And like you've seen, like with John Tavares, how difficult it was for him to leave.
Yeah.
Which I sort of understand. Like he grew up there. It's the only organization he's played for. But like, if you're being objective, he owes nothing to them. Mm-hmm. They just drafted him. They signed him to an awesome contract, bargain contract. They didn't surround him with much talent at all. Yep. They made the playoffs three times. Like, what right to the? Like, why should he stay? Never made sense.
But let's get rid of right because I want to push this to rights. I want to push this to team because, I find it interesting because a lot of people have said the same thing. Like, oh, these players, they got to stop being so loyal, but. What if they like it? What if they like loyalty and team and just being part of a team? It means there is a sense of loyalty. There's a sense of satisfaction that comes from. There's a sense of satisfaction of giving up a little bit of the me for the greater good.
But is that like, are we confusing that with actual loyalty? Like what is loyal about? It's more silly than it is loyal. Like, should you be continually loyal to a franchise that isn't doing anything right? Like, what's loyal about that? What does he, why should he be loyal? Like, quote unquote, I don't think mm-hmm. that's loyal. I don't think that's fair to even paint it.
I'm talking about the bigger picture. We were talking about, we'd better if more players stopped making it about a team and more made it about them.
I think it would be better. I think it would be better for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, who am I to say what Steven Stamkos should do or what any of these guys should do? They should do whatever they want.
Yeah.
Same thing with LeBron. Like, if LeBron wants to go play for the Milwaukee Bucks, he should go play for the Milwaukee Bucks. Like, we shouldn't. I don't want anyone telling me what I should do with my life. Like, why should we tell these guys what they should do with their lives?
Except for Durant, coward.
Yeah.
Just lazy coward Kevin Durant.
But that's another good example. Like, what did he do wrong?
Oh, he did a lot wrong.
Nothing.
He did a lot wrong.
He took them to the NBA final once.
Yeah.
They should have gotten back to the NBA final. They should have beaten Golden State. History would be changed.
Yep.
But like, he did everything right. He was like a model player. He was a model citizen.
He did everything right until he decided to jump ship and join the 73 win team.
Which is his total right.
It
just
is
like,
his right.
Just like in any field. Let's say you're a lawyer and you're an awesome lawyer.
But
and
it's different. Listen, you're right. It was within his right. And on the front end, let me say, this is my sports hypocrisy and this is my sports selfish coming out. But when he went to Golden State, what eventually it meant is that we pretty much knew what was going to happen. And yes, Houston gave him a run. I think Houston gave him a run because the Golden State players didn't give a bleep.
Why should Kevin Durant care about that?
He shouldn't.
If but he I'm wants saying, to go live in Northern California and he wants to play for a good team,
that's great. That's but it's totally fine. It hurt my enjoyment of the NBA.
Boo-hoo.
I know.
It's not about you.
I know it's not about me. But it's also I'm allowed to voice my right and say that what he did was cowardly and lazy. He took the easy.
That's such horse, you know.
Can we both agree on this?
And wait a second. It's as much as it hasn't been like we've known what the finals are going to be for the last 4 years. Some of these finals have been competitive. Like game one was one of the best this past year was one of the best games I've ever seen.
Great. And the other 75% of the finals?
No, that's not true. Game three was good. Game four got a game. It's only.
Oh, get out of here.
That's not true.
Get out of here.
And like 2 years before, I'm trying to figure out the chronology. So Golden State wins in 15.
In six. Then the next year they lose in seven. Then they win in five and they win in four.
But even like 15, I think I'm remembering this right. Love and Kyrie are both hurt.
Both hurt.
LeBron plays like better than to that point I had ever seen anybody play.
Oh yeah,
he was unbelievable.
Oh yeah, and they, almost they won two games
and
they
like almost out. Willed them back in that series.
It was crazy. They won the that series was tied 2-2.
So I love that. I love having like great teams. I hate honestly like the way it is in the NHL.
Yes, I know. I love having great teams as well, but. With basketball, with one player having a more disproportionate impact on the outcome of a game, what Durant did, even more than LeBron, because LeBron was going to a Miami team. That was like a 45-ish win team. You know, the couple down years after they won the title against Dallas. But for the second best, you know, just again, this sentence, and it's so unique. The second best player joined the team that just set an NBA record for wins. Mm-hmm. That bummed me out, and it has taken away some of my enjoyment of the game because every conversation about basketball ends with this sentence. Yeah, but you know, in the end, best case scenario, maybe you win a game against Golden State.
Okay, so what you're saying is Kevin Durant, when he's deciding about his future, he should sit there and be like, you know what? What's really good for the league and for the fans to enjoy the league?
I feel like Bob Mack.
I should stay in OKC.
I feel like Bob is sitting here right now because you just put words in my mouth. I never said that. I said what we can agree on this, and this take emotion out of this. Just go pure analytic. Kevin Durant's decision gave him the best chance of winning a title.
Of course,
no player has ever like that. To me, was. The easiest, if you want to pick, the easiest route to win a championship in any sport is joining Golden State, just because of the nature of basketball.
So what's wrong with that?
It takes away from
the... You realize he like it's partly because he's an unbelievable player.
What did I say a minute ago? He's the second best player in the
game. Right, so like it's partly because of him.
Yeah.
And obviously what you're saying is it's also partly because of the team, because the team is great.
Yeah, they could have won the title this year without him.
Maybe. We don't know.
What I like, listen, I don't like the Uber parody, but this is all I ask for. Give me, there's 30 teams in the NBA, right? Give me the case that seven, less than 25%, that's seven or even six.
It's not even that many.
I know it's not.
It's like four.
Four? It's Boston. It's Houston. It's Golden State. That's it.
Right now. But like,
that's a bummer. And by the way, last year it wasn't even that many. I'm not asking for this. And by the way, the only thing I love about you is you bounce back and forth between socialism and capitalism. When it comes to the players, oh, the poor players, the owners are just destroying them. You're full socialist. But when it comes to the NBA, you want all the talent on one team.
No, I want players to do whatever they want.
Yes, that's wonderful. We all want that. Except for in this case, I want them to revoke it. And I wish the NBA wish the NBA had said, Kevin Durant, you can't go there because you're making the league too predictable.
But you know what the other thing is? Why should Golden State be punished because they did well? Like,
who's punishing them?
No, you are. You're saying they shouldn't get the best player because they're already boring. Really good. Yeah, but like Curry was like a fifth or sixth overall pick, or maybe even seventh. I think he was sixth. Maybe it was seven. Minnesota could have taken him twice. They could have. Lots of teams passed on Curry. Klay Thompson, I think, went 11. Yeah. Draymond Green's a second-round pick.
Golden State is an incredibly well-run, built organization.
And so So they should, if they put themselves in a position where they're awesome without Kevin Durant, and then Kevin Durant's like, hey, that looks fun. Like, these guys seem to like each other. They win.
Yeah.
I get to live in Northern California. I get to live in Silicon Valley. There's so much happening where I could do all this stuff outside. Mm-hmm. Do it.
You mentioned you've got some holes in your pop culture game, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen, were you a fan of Star Wars?
No, so that's another hole. Okay. Although I've watched like some of the new ones, but I'm not.
No, the new ones aren't that good.
No, so that's a hole.
Can you give me any sort of like action or sci-fi movie that you really liked?
Honestly, I don't know. I think it was because of the books. I like The Lord of the Rings.
Okay. Perfect.
Is that sci-fi?
Yeah. No. That works.
That's more fantasy fiction. No,
that works perfectly for this. Let's say somewhere early on in the first of The Lord of the Rings.
You're going down a bad road.
Bilbo Baggins, and Sam and the rest of them decided, you know what? Let's take this ring and let's go join Sauron. Hey, everyone. And and Gandalf decided, you know what? Bleep the elves.
Bad.
I'm going to go join. That's what happened with Golden State. That's what happened here. And guess what? If that had happened, then the rest of the book would have been, and then they destroyed more elves. Then they killed all the dwarfs. The end. That's what Golden State did.
That is not a good comparison.
That's a great comparison.
Do you have anything else about that, or is that it?
That's it.
Okay.
That's it. Hey, by the way, going back to one thing, you were talking about the Leafs and Tavares and about all the big things like Babcock and winning the draft. Where do you put Lamoriello?
You know what I'm fascinated with? Mm. That, how do I put this right?
Yeah.
That we allow perceptions, and this is like the world in general.
Yeah.
To go beyond what seems to be supported by facts. And I think he's a really good example of that. He was a really good general manager a long time ago.
Yeah.
There is not a lot of evidence in the last 10 years, if you want to use that.
Interesting.
That he is a good general manager. And I think it's fascinating that, like, it was really interesting at the time seeing like the perceptions of him going to the Islanders, that he's got this great track record of rebuilding like the Leafs, and like he's this great general manager, he's going to bring order. The evidence is not as strong that he is a good general manager, and I'm very fascinated that hockey journalists, fans, that this is, and maybe I shouldn't put it on fans, that hockey journalists continue to perpetuate this idea that he is this mythical GM, which isn't supported by evidence.
Certainly the last 6 months haven't been great. But this is interesting. Help me out with here. Because I look at Lamoriello's days with the Maple Leafs in a very positive way. I believe he was in charge of the Riley and Kadri contracts.
Yep, good contracts.
Which, are great contracts.
Mm-hmm.
These are, especially Kadri. Mm-hmm. And again, Kadri developed, and it's not like, he got the contract and Lamoriello said, now you be good. I mean, Kadri, the player he is now, that's about his own developments with Babcock. And it's about Kadri just maturing as a human being, as a player. Mm-hmm. But he did those deals. He was able to trade away. I think he was in charge when Phaneuf.
Yep.
And Ottawa took all the money. Oh, mm-hmm. my God. Yep. He was able to do some other deals.
Mm-hmm.
He brought in Frederik Andersen.
Yeah, you can quibble with that one.
Yeah, but I mean, Frederik Andersen is...
It's fine.
He's not an elite goaltender, but he's above average.
It's fine. And I know, like, I've heard Kyle Dubas reference that trade quite a bit when he's talked about Lamoriello. Fine. It's a fine trade.
And also, was he... I don't know. And I don't know this one. How responsible was he with the Nylander and the Marner over Hanifin pick?
He was not there for Marner. He was not there for Nylander.
Okay, so he wasn't there for the... Okay, thank you. Because I always... Sometimes I get my mm-hmm. I get my timelines a little bit...
And Matthews, you or I could have picked Matthews.
Yes. I was so glad they didn't take... who's the guy that Edmonton took who's now kind of like almost out of the league?
Oh, I know who you're talking about. The Russian.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't take that guy because I'm like, please don't make me pronounce his name. I was so happy when they got first because let me tell you.
Yakupov.
Yeah. No, not Yakupov. The Austin Matthews year. There was another guy. Not
Puljujärvi.
Puljujärvi.
He went fourth.
Yeah, that's
or
it.
Or third. No, fourth. fourth.
But at the time before the draft, I'm like, oh, please don't be in the position to take that guy because I figured it would take me 2 months to say his name. Well, Austin Matthews, not that long. But all those things I listed, all of those have been like, I mean, no general manager is perfect. Every general manager makes mistakes. But I look at when Lou Lamoriello, when he came here and when he left, to me, he did far more positive than negative. Tell me how I'm wrong.
I think what he did best was, honestly, it's a lot of the stuff that I think is total nonsense. Mm-hmm. But like this, the team was kind of out of control a little bit before he got there. And yep. I may not agree with all those little rules. Some of them I think are just crazy today. But it did install like some order.
Yeah.
Like it was like it kind of put someone in charge who was going to not take shit.
Yeah.
And you can point out like some of the things that he did. I don't know that you can also, I could also point out lots of things that he did that wasn't good.
Yep.
You can point to Nikita Zaitsev's contract. Mm-hmm. You can point to Matt Martin. Like you can point to some of what they did at the trade deadline, what they did in the offseason. I don't think you can say that because of Lou Lamoriello, the Leafs made the steps that they made. I think if you had GM X, whether like if it was George McPhee,
a replacement level GM.
Yeah. I'm not certain.
I don't
certain,
know what the war is for other GMs.
Yeah, I'm not certain that the same GM couldn't have done those things. Mm-hmm. Like they weren't, the Leafs were going to get better because of, irregardless of Lou Lamoriello. Like they had Babcock, they got Matthews, they had Marner, they had Nylander. Some of these guys they drafted before, like they acquired Zach Hyman before he was in charge. They picked Connor Brown, they picked Andreas Johnsson, they picked Morgan Riley.
Yeah.
Jake Gardner, like I can keep going, like yeah, going down the list. Travis Dermott. Mm-hmm. The foundations of their team generally were already in place.
Yeah.
And I'm not certain if there's general manager X, that general manager X couldn't have signed Nazem Kadri or Morgan Riley to those contracts. And if you go back to his previous team, he left the Devils and he can point to, you know, ownership and money and all that stuff. He left the Devils in a really bad spot. They mm-hmm. had nothing.
Yep.
And some of the moves he made, like signing Ryan Clough for 5 years when it was clear Ryan Clough was coming off like a one goal season. Some of the things
he
did.
So he was due for a rebound.
Right. No. Like it's just like, and they had missed the playoffs, I think in 7 or 8 years. That one, that might not be right, but they went to the cup final in 2012 on a, like a hope and a wish and a prayer. But otherwise they were a bad team. He left them in a bad position. So the fact that he's getting credit, like I've seen people say like, for doing this great job rebuilding the Leafs and putting the Leafs in a better position. I'm not sure that with a different general manager, they wouldn't have been in the same position. I do give him credit for doing his stuff, like the Lou stuff. I don't think it's necessary. I think maybe you could do it without it. Like I'm not certain that a different general manager doesn't come in, install some order in other ways, and things don't change the same way, I guess is my point. I just don't understand this. I think it's fiction that he's still a great general manager. He won a cup 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, when do we stop giving credit? Like, I think I used this comparison with James at some point. Like, when do we stop looking at a band that was great 20 years ago and hasn't made a great album since?
Yeah.
At some point, they're not a great band anymore. Like, I think I use Weezer. Like, I like Weezer. Weezer isn't a great band anymore. Weezer made two really, really good albums when they came out.
Yeah.
And then, like, just a bunch of stuff. And that's, to me, some of the fiction with Lamoriello.
All right, that's fair.
He's really nice to media, and like I get that. But
I've actually never.
I just think we should look at the facts a little bit more closely.
By the way, you want to look at some facts? You want to look at things in a bad position? When things are in a bad position, you got to turn them around. And sometimes you need help doing it. And you know who we use when we need help? We use our lawyer, Jeff Pollock. This guy is in charge of my will and trust, and he did it in a fantastic way. Seriously. Like Jeff Pollock, it is a small law firm, but they take care of everything. Litigation, states, trusts, corporate, commercial, real estate law, and just a really nice guy. He treats you, you know, like a client, like you literally are like a friend. We chat all the time. We text each other all the time about wine and stuff, which shouldn't come as a shock. If you need a lawyer, cannot recommend this guy high enough. Jeff Pollock, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. Phone number 416-777-0088. That number again, 416-777-0088. 777-0088. It's like a pizza phone number. It's so easy to remember. And remember, his wife, Yevgeny, she can help you with all things accounting. You can get her at epollock.com. How was that for a read?
Good.
Yeah?
Good energy.
Thank you. Well, that's the key. That's the key. By the way, I'm not reading this. This is from my heart. This is how I feel. And by the way, you were speaking about bands, about how some bands are good, and you know some bands, you know, after they put out a couple albums, they're bad. Well, speaking of good bands, what if you want to go see a band, but the tickets are sold out? What are you going to do? Well, you could go to some of those other ticket agents, but they're always in American money. You know, I'm going to go to Ticketmaster. Wait a minute, it's only $49? Hooray. And then you get the tickets. Like, wait a minute, why is it $73? Because they didn't give you the conversion. Well, you know who does that? Seat Giant. They are a Canadian partner on the show, Canadian owned and operated, seatgiant.ca for all your tickets. And the final final amount you see, is it in Canadian dollars? And when you go to checkout, put the discount code Bob and Matt, B-O-B, Bob and Matt, at checkout, and you will save some money. And we get a little bit of that money comes our way, which is great because podcast ain't free. No more exchange fees, bank fees, or anything. Just use that checkout. Use Bob and Matt at checkout for seatgiant.ca. You save money. We get some money. Win-win. How was that?
Win-win.
Yeah, win-win. All right. Corn on the cob. Will you eat corn on the cob in February?
You can't get it. Well, actually, I guess you can.
No,
yeah,
no,
it's not as good.
You can get it.
It's not as good when it comes in those packages where it's like seal wrapped.
Yeah.
It's way better when it's fresh and like you can pull off the husk.
You got to shuck it. You got to shuck the corn.
It's so much better.
It's so much better. And I always like, the one thing I like about it is when I'm at my cottage with family, you know, they're better cooks than I am. So I'm always in charge of shucking the corn. I get the dumb Mongo job, you know, like I'm like Lenny in, Not to Kill a Mockingbird.
I know which book.
Lenny and Georgia.
I never read this book. That's another cultural misfire.
Damn it! I should remember that.
Tom Sawyer?
No, not Tom Sawyer.
Huckleberry Finn?
No. This is bad pod. Now we're just gonna read off.
I know which one you're talking about.
Lenny and George and the rabbits, and eventually he gets killed.
Of Mice and Men.
Of Mice and Men. Thank you. Yeah,
so I haven't read any of those books, by the way.
You've never read any of those books?
I've never read Of Mice and Men. I've never read Tom Sawyer.
Have you read any Dostoevsky?
No, I've thought about that. That's a huge ass commitment.
It's a big read.
I can't do 1,000-page reads.
You know, it takes a little time.
The library only gives you like 2 weeks.
The library. You can trust me, those books aren't that expensive. But what are foods for you? Is there any foods you can think of that only can be? Because to me, corn on the cob is the number one summer food.
Summer food. Well, watermelon.
Watermelon?
I love watermelon.
Love watermelon. But you rarely have it in February.
Right.
Yeah.
Like fresh, like strawberries.
Yeah, tropical fruit.
It's different
mango,
when you get it
peach.
From Canada, like Ontario.
Yeah.
And like it's like the locally grown stuff. It actually tastes better.
It does.
And different.
Yeah.
Blueberries, same thing. Raspberries.
Yeah, all the fruits work. Corn to me is the most interesting one because corn has a defined peak. And I'm going to tell you when it is. It's like first week of August to near the end of August. Like you've got about like, because where my cottage is, there's a farm nearby and they only release the corn for about a 1 month period. And it is, in three words, delicious. And the corn has a peak, is a very small peak. And that to me is the ultimate of the summer foods.
Do we have any other contenders? Just the watermelon?
I think watermelon. And then for me, it's more the tropical, more like I'm going to go peach.
Yeah, peach is good. Nectarine. Do you know what tastes better in the summer? Mm. And I think it's because of the sun. If you have like a Radler.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't have the same experience when you're not sitting on a patio or sitting
true.
In the sun.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point. Like a Radler in February for hockey night in Canada doesn't feel the same.
And vice versa. Like having a Guinness on like a warm patio doesn't really work. Corona.
Yeah.
Like do you ever like. I don't know what Corona's sales numbers are, but like, can you imagine what the difference is in like July versus December in Toronto?
It's got to dip. It's a good point. Same thing with wine. Like I don't drink as much Cabernet Sauvignon or a lot of just like thicker skin grapes. And I can have this conversation without getting the stink eye from Bob. But yeah, like the thicker, like there's more white wine, more acidic white wine, more rosé in the summer than certainly in the winter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. Would you trade DeRozan, Siakam, and two first-round picks for Kawhi Leonard?
Good question.
Now, by the way, is that a good question or are you stalling?
You always think that when I say good question, I'm stalling. I'm not. Okay. I think it's a good, I would do it. Because like the upside, obviously he's probably going to leave in 1 year.
Yeah.
But the upside of that 1 year, you potentially have a chance to get to the NBA final.
And lose to Golden State and possibly
but who
five.
But who cares?
Like no. I agree with you. I was being snarky. That was just a callback. I agree with you.
Sure. Like you would probably lose. Yeah. But like the one thing we have to remember with Golden State, shit happens. Like Steph Curry could get hurt before the playoffs and like they're a different team.
Yep.
Kevin Durant could, like, who knows what happens.
Kevin Durant could get into another internet fight with a 17-year-old, and that puts him into a shame spiral.
Well, and this team is going to have to turn over pretty soon anyway. Like, this is going to happen, if not now, then 2 years from now. I think when Lowry and DeRozan are both up, I think that's when they're both up, or whenever it is. Like, this is coming soon. So at least, like, if you gave me Lowry and, like, I have Leonard and I have JV and, like, I still have some of those good, interesting young pieces.
Yep.
I would be okay going into, like, Boston, I think, would still be the favorite, but I would be okay playing Philly.
Oh, yeah. Philly, I think, is...
Philly's going to get more love than they deserve. You just never know.
Oh, yeah. You never know the Boston. Also, Boston...
And Toronto plays well against Boston.
Yeah, Valanciunas always plays well against the Celtics, and it's going to be interesting. If Hayward and Kyrie are fully healthy, and now you got to work those guys with Jaylen Brown, what Tatum did... It's going to be an interesting dynamic. I mean, Brad Stevens is a great coach. This is going to be hard. Originally, I didn't like the idea because I was worried that the Raptors were going to become the Brooklyn Nets, you know, mortgaging everything for the short little run and being screwed. But I take that risk because what if, I mean, Paul George, no one thought he was going to go, that he was going to stay in OKC. His own documentary talked about how much he dreamed of playing with the Lakers. He re-signed with OKC. You do this risk for the small chance you can get Kawhi Leonard to re-sign. And you sell him on the fact that, hey, you're in the East. Ease your way through the playoffs. B, you're the man. Also, you're going to blaze a new trail here, and you're going to have an entire nation with you, and Drake is going to be there with you, and Drake is going to find ways to rhyme Kawhi Leonard in his next 17 songs. And the for the opportunity to maybe, and it's a slim one, to get a top five or six player. I have
see,
Kawhi
I,
at number six.
That wouldn't
six.
Be my reason. My reason would just be to try to maximize what the team can do.
Oh, no, you get the 1 year. But then the possibility.
I just wouldn't be counting on that. But I hear you.
Well, I'm not counting on it. I only put it at like a 10% chance.
But I would just do it because if I'm trying to get to the NBA Finals, I can keep it the status quo.
Yeah.
And I don't think my chances are as good. The other thing, like with Kawhi, is like we don't know what Kawhi is going to look like.
No.
We don't know how healthy Kawhi is going to be. Like we don't. He hasn't played. Like he played 9 games, I think, last year.
Played 9 games.
We don't know what Kawhi is, but I think it's worth the risk. I'm not sure that even. Like it's interesting looking at it from San Antonio's perspective. Like what the upside in that is you remain competitive. Like you'd have Aldridge and you'd have DeRozan and you'd have a competitive roster. You have Pop.
Yeah.
But it's like long-term, like you have those first round picks, which, you know, we've seen with like how Boston did it. Like you can turn those into something.
Yep.
And Siakam, like I love Siakam and he has potential to be something interesting if he can figure out how to shoot.
Yeah, well, that's a big if.
It's a big thing. It's not a fair comparison, but like there was a time when Kawhi couldn't shoot, and everyone's like, Kawhi can't shoot.
I know. By the way, people are doing that with OG Anunoby. Like, hey, OG, yeah, maybe you could become like Kawhi Leonard.
No. But he also very good in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, well, listen, OG,
pretty good.
OG could become, his ceiling is like second tier star.
Sure,
that's a damn good ceiling. We're out of time. It's basically been an hour. By the way, plug, what's coming up with you with The Athletic? You were saying you're on vacation, you're in Croatia, good timing for that with the World Cup. What's going on with Jonas? What are you writing about? What are you working on?
Actually, today I just released a Q&A with Connor Carrick.
Okay, yeah.
So I talked to him at the draft for a long time. Like he's the one thing with talking to him is he's very introspective. He really tells you what he thinks. So that's up on The Athletic, and then I can't tell you what's next.
You can't.
Partly because I don't know, and I don't know what's going to come through. But
You're working on something you can't say.
Hopefully. We'll see.
One day in my life, I want to have that. One day I want to have a conversation. Oh, what are you working on, Matt? Well, I'm working on a project, but I can't talk about it. I got an NDA or any of that thing.
No, like, I don't know if it's actually going to happen. Like, yeah. I have all these things that I hope to accomplish, and we'll see if they accomplish.
Jonas, always appreciate. Thank you so much for lending the time, being part of the podcast.
Of course, anytime.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.